discussion at the meeting, and then in October and January of 2010 and January 2011, we assessed the desirability of extending bonding requirements to include coverage and environmental damage outside the permitted development area. And saying that this is consistent with the mandate of the state law, noting quotes, we were saying. In the absence of such guarantees, the public is left liable for all expenses in repair areas sustaining off-site sediment damage, either as an individual or as property that has been dumped on, or local government, where there may be a condition involving public property or immortals. The January meeting, the motion was approved by the committee instructing Chairman Ellinger to communicate to the POC, requesting an amendment to the LDC such that all major subdivisions and commercial properties that disturb more than 1 acre of land require including a guarantee that includes money available to remediate water quality issues. This was presumably done, although no record exists of the wording in subsequent committee documents. Planning Director Anthony Starr apparently did receive a copy of this request based on an email between him and Mark Ellinger. So I don't know exactly what that said. In April 2011, the EAC again discussed the desirability of extending the bonding requirements to include coverage of environmental damage outside the permitted area. And I reported at that time on preliminary discussions with Mr. Mark Pruitt, Program Director in Haywood County, of their erosion control program. And these comments are reported in the April minutes of our committee. Mr. Pruitt reviewed the operation of their program, stated that he saw no reason why off-site remediation could not be included in a bonding agreement, as this would be consistent with county responsibility to ensure compliance with state and federal requirements. And this is also consistent with the statement by Mr. Burrell, quoting above, saying that, and also so far as the same is required by the federal, state, and county erosion implementation standards. So, there's also a section in the Haywood County Sedimentation and Erosion Ordinance, section 154.22, that states that the control of off-site sediment damage is an objective to be included in the permit application. It would seem at this point that it would be desirable for the EAC to provide some further documentation in support of a more detailed recommendation, containing specifics on other similar ordinances which may exist in nearby counties and criteria for application. Clearly, there seems to be nothing preventing the broadening of the existing ordinance. So, based on that, I've written up a recommendation for consideration by our group and transmittal by the chairman and approved, which reads as follows. Considering the potential for significant damage to our waterways from excessive sediment due to unchecked erosion, Seven Falls and Little Willow Creek being a good example, the enhancement of our bonding authority to include off-site remediation seems warranted. The State Pollution, the Sedimentation Pollution Control Act is clear, as is the enabling legislation for bonding. Part of the permitting process that should be determined by qualified inspectors if potential for off-site damage to waterways is significant. If so, provision should be made in the bonding agreement to cover such remediation as may be necessary. If the likelihood is low, no such requirement need be imposed. I think the point here is not to get into too many details, but just to convey our belief that this is a serious enough issue that the Board of Commissioners needs to get moving on it, instructing either the staff or hiring consultants or asking us to do some more work and come up with some specifics to ensure the public doesn't get left holding the bag and individuals don't wind up having to incur large expenses on their home because the person responsible and left
they were considering some measures along that line.
I never heard anything, and we don't know that. If you ever got to them.
Ron, sorry if I may interrupt, Ron emailed Terry Wilson as instructed before, and Terry, her job, she forwarded the email and his request to all the commissioners, and that's the last I heard of, because I was copied on the initial email, and Terry just forwarded that email, so it was sent to all the commissioners at that time.
We have no reason to believe it wasn't.
Right, yeah, that's just to confirm, that's
from what I recall. But anyways, where we go from here is to forget about what was done, you know, and just proceed as we think necessary at this point. But,
well, I think it's definitely something that needs to be done, and this is the approach is anyways.
One thing I think is important here, there will arise the question, well, how big a development or how big a disturbance do you want to have as a trigger? And my feeling is that that's not an issue. The issue is how close are you to a stream or some type of property that might suffer damage. It might be a park, it might be, you know, some public facility.
Or just part of the property.
So that should be the issue. And, you know, when you have only 1 acre, how much silt can you get out of 1 acre? Maybe you can't do enough damage. So these are things that an inspector or, you know, somebody, you know, an engineer would have to make decisions on. But at least if they're specifically given the authority, you know, in the ordinance, it would be a whole lot easier. So that's my only other comment on that.
Just one point of clarification. It has been reported in Henderson County that erosion from a single acre has exceeded 20 tons per year. So that can be sizable.
Right.
Depending upon the length.
Right.
20 tons.
I have one other example of that with a group out on Turnpike Road, the Church of the Holy Family, that runs the mediation of the creek. Boylston Creek running through the back of their property. He worked with Sean Ward from the Soil and Water Conservation District. He went out there and he measured how many feet had eroded over a certain length. I think he came up with in the last few years 34 tons. So, this is at Boylston Creek.
Do you think any of that sort of information should be included there?
No, not in any recommendation.
Do you think they have any idea what they're... How much is like...
Oh, I'm sure they had no idea. I didn't have any idea.
Well, when you said that, you know, that's enormous. And I'm sure these...
But they're heavy, too. So you've got to realize 34 tons might just be, you know, 4 feet by 3 feet back from the stream and 20 feet long.
It's still a lot.
When you spread it out, you know, on a straight bank, you cover all the gravel and the rocks that the little critters need to hide under, and, you know, you do some real damage to the...
Well, we have a motion on the floor. It's been seconded.
Maybe I should add one other thing here. I did make a few notes, which we have as backup material if we need it, from the Haywood County ordinances. Yeah. Well, I don't need to go into all the details on it, but there are surety sections, appeal processes, and penalty sections in their ordinance, which could be applied in this case. When it comes time to take some further action on this, I'll have the security with reference to anybody who wants to use it. I don't think we need to discuss this. One other point, talked to Mark Pruitt again yesterday. He gave me the name of the state sediment specialist in the land quality section of the Division of Natural Resources of Deer. Well, T. Ray Hauser Jr. is an excellent resource for further consultation if you want to talk. So I've also got that note.
Okay. Motion's on the floor.
Yeah, I think it's fine, except I just wonder, like I said before, if we don't need a few more details just to alert them that we're not, you know, responsible for that. could be an addendum or something.
I'll accept that as a friendly amendment. If you want to add the information that you just quoted to the motion, I would approve of that.
I wonder if that could be converted for everybody's conceptual imagination, the some way of converting that to yardage. You know, it could be 17 dump trucks.
Well, it all depends on how
because of the thick
how much it spread.
Yeah, and how thick, how what the density, how wet it is, and all that. But, you know, you're talking about 120 tons and how many or whatever it was.
20 tons per year for an acre.
Okay, so in sense of, you know, there's
my
like
car is 40 tons.
Well, and gravel, you order gravel with 5 yards is like, you know, 4,000 pounds or something like that, or whatever.
It all depends on the nature of the material, right, how far it spreads. So.
And also the ability to do damage depends on the nature of the stream bed as well. So it's a very variable kind of thing.
Plus the elevation of the land.
Well, plus how fast it's running down.
Yeah,
you know,
if it's a steep slope or it's just a flat slope.
Yeah, I think at this point confusion becomes an enemy. So, but I would agree that you wanted to make just one quick example as an amendment of what you just quoted.
We're ready to vote. What we're going to do is we're going to take that motion and I'm going to forward it to the commission. Request that they address this issue, which we think is important. Okay.
Okay.
All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Very good. Thank you. Appreciate your effort there. Substantive amount of work. Okay. Moving on. Rich and Richard were involved in the amassing of information with respect to the question of erosion as a problem in this good county. And we'll turn it over to you to tell us for a report.
Okay, well, I'll just read the report here, which also deals with erosion through the steepness of slopes, and we recognize that we live in an area that has a large amount of slopes, anywhere from mild to very steep, and at ridgetop and steep slope management and development regulation is an important issue, and it's an issue that's been raised not only in the Land Development Code or the 2020 comprehensive plan, but more specifically in the 3 small area planning committee discussions we've had since 2007. In every case, the small area planning requests have requested more strict ordinances regarding control of steep slopes and development on steep slopes. Although it's not, it is connected. It is a rather catastrophic event, but just in looking at landslides, Henderson County has experienced 88 landslides since 1917, and 73% of those have occurred on slopes that were modified. So in 2011, the North Carolina Geological Survey was tasked with completing a landslide hazard mapping project in which they only got to map, I believe, 4 counties, but Henderson County was the last and final one until the funds were pulled from that program for economic reasons. That final report that was handled by the mapping team leader and senior geologist Rick Wooten of the NC Geological Survey, which is a division of the FEMA, that particular report indicated that about 20% of the county is in a hazard zone or in a debris flow pathway. So there is some concern, although that number is maybe not as high as one might imagine. Mr. Wooten had reported and indicated publicly that a number of factors come into play when analyzing the frequency of landslides, and specifically to this situation, this kind of hazard increases when the slope exceeds 40% and when rainfall totals exceed 5 inches or more in 24 hours. experienced that in several parts of this county just 3 days or 4 days ago.
Yeah, I got to find a quarter.
Right. So certainly landslides and these types of geohazards are catastrophic. They're a risk to life and limb. They're also a significant threat to the health of our public waterways due to the runoff and sediment deposits that occur as a result of events like this. So increased sedimentation results in decreased carrying capacity of streams and waterways, or the ability of the waterway to carry the fluid. So it causes, resulting in bank overflows and ultimate flood. In our own land development code, the density and dimensional requirements and the general subdivision regulations that are set forth in Article 3, Section 208-74, are in place to, quote, promote through proper planning the health, safety, and general welfare by providing for the orderly subdivision of land in Henderson County. And in particular, item J of that article is directed to minimize site disturbance and erosion through retention of existing vegetation and avoiding development on steep slopes. So we already have some precedent there. It's understood that the county has important economic benefits to its city, to its citizens, and adverse effects from improperly planned developments can pose a threat to the health and well-being of county residents and threaten long-term sustainability of associated activities. Economic pressures, unknown site conditions, inadequate or inappropriate design or inexperienced land disturbers can adversely affect quality, safety, and stability of construction, including creation of grade slopes and fills. So in order for the creation of a reasonably stable artificial slopes on developed land, it's important that disturbed land be developed to contain graded slopes and fills that will remain stable for a reasonable lifespan. Stable properties are important and valuable economic consideration for property owners as well as the citizens of the county. Currently, the definition of steep slope is defined in Article 14, subpart 200A-391, is a slope greater than 60% as measured by standard engineering methods approved for use in the state of North Carolina, and as defined in Article 14, subpart 200A-391. Essentially, that's an average slope. It's calculated by a height, a horizontal to vertical projection, whereas the horizontal is divided into the vertical and a percentage comes of it. The Environmental Advisory Committee would recommend that the definition of the steep slope be redefined to describe a slope greater than 40%. This is not an unprecedented figure, as ordinances passed in 2010 in our neighbor to the north, Buncombe County, assesses slopes greater than 25% and 35% with reduced soil disturbance ratios. They calculate their, we do a density factor, and they do a disturbed earth factor, but they assign different ratios as the slope gets steeper or less is assigned to the ability to disturb the soil. White County, Georgia has a similar ordinance that assigns soil disturbance ratios to slopes within a five-tier strategy that ranges between 24 and 40%. As the severity of the slope gets steeper, the area of disturbed land becomes minimized. And several other counties in West North Carolina region have already enacted or are considering enacting more stringent ordinances that reflect concerns for the impact of poorly regulated development and the fiscal and legal liabilities thereof. That's the recommendation.
Okay. So succinctly, we want the commissioners to redefine a steep slope as 40% or more.
Yeah. That is it in a nutshell. I mean, that's certainly taking the advice of any physical or geophysical or engineering recommendation that may include that number, but it looks like other counties have done even more stuff. So I think 40 is probably a good fair figure.
Yeah, it would be good to mention the article that you said about the hesitancy of contractors.
Right.
I'll accept that as a motion. I'll second it.
I'll second it.
Okay, very good. Rich?
Yeah, as a point of discussion here, one of the first thing that's gonna come up is that, oh, this is gonna discourage development. And it may discourage some people, but I can give you an example which turned up this summer. Developers from Florida have come up to Western North Carolina, this is a particular group, looking for abandoned golf course properties and residential properties that they can take over and finish developing. They talked to people in Macon County, and they told them they would not deal with any county that did not have an adequate steep slope ordinance in place. And this was an article that appeared in the Citizen Times, the actual Citizen Times this Sunday. And they pointed out that it was pretty much excluding anything east of some, or west of some particular point. I don't remember what it was. So the upshot of this is, there are good developers out there, they may even be out-of-state developers, and we don't want to make the assumption that anybody that comes in from out-of-state is a bad person we want to keep out. There are good developers, and that's what we want to attract. We want to get rid of them. People who are not good, whether they're in-state or out-of-state. And the fact that they are considering only areas, or willing to consider only areas where they realize there's significant protection, says something good about them. I think that that speaks very strongly, in fact, to the fact that such a an increase in our, requirement for dealing with steep slopes is not going to be inhibiting to the kind of developers that we would like to see come in. And they're out there, I'm sure.
I must say I'm surprised to hear that.
Yeah, I was too. Yeah. I mean, I've got the article. I don't know if I've already looked at it.
And I would copy a lot of that is liability, too. It's not just pureness of heart.
Yeah.
In other words, the legal liability is.
Right. Well, they saw what happened to some other people around here. You know.
It also should be pointed out that there's a fair amount of development still going on in Haywood County, and they have the stricter regulations.
And how is development in Buncombe County going?
Now they did ask that. I wasn't sure about that. I had done more research after our subcommittee meeting, and they did pass a more stringent steep slope. They base their parameters on different values than we do in this county, but the end result is the same. The staff had recommended a certain number, and they adjusted it slightly, but it's still stricter than it was, and I don't think that would change the economic impact of the developer working. It's been the economy that has, not the rules.
Well, I remember we had that steep slope people from Buncombe County last year, the before last, come in and give a presentation, and actually I think we were advocating for like 35% slopes.
Yeah, I remember people from and the people from Pope too had joined the Buncombe people.
We had a presentation
in the library.
No, it was right here.
Oh, here it was.
Okay,
I
don't remember that.
And
but
the commissioner, and they gave it to the commissioners as well.
And that included bridge stock construction.
Yeah, I think so. That would, of course, our recommendation was, I think, 35%.
Well, it doesn't preclude development at all. Like the Haywood County ordinance dumps everything on engineering. In other words, it can be done even on, they mentioned slopes quite steep, like 45%, but that's with very, very stringent engineering. Standard practice, piers buried, 15 feet in the ground in concrete, and, it's not that it can't be done, it's just that it may be so expensive to do it that it's just not desirable to do it.
I think the engineers will tell you it can always be done.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But the problem is later on, is it going to hold up? It may. On the other hand, it may all flow down the mountain to the next person below them.
And they have, actually, in the ordinance, they have a chart as to the degree of overbearing that needs to be done on different levels, slopes, and different types of soil. In other words, this has to be 1.5 times what it should be to be acceptable. This has to be 1.2 times. they do it by assessing it based on what a reasonable lifespan would be for the structure, whatever that may be, 100 years, I don't know.
I wonder when these things, you know, then of course the planning board has to approve anything.
Yeah.
Do they have to have the plans in place and all this ahead of time before they approve it?
Haywood County has an engineering review board that is specifically called in. It involves a soils specialist, an engineer, a member of the development community, a developer or a contractor of some type, government representatives, and some others. And this is a special use board that is convened to review anything greater than, I believe it was 40% in that county, and then they have to, of course, present their plan, present their staff, engineering drawings, and all that stuff. So they don't make it easy. Once it gets up to a certain slope ratio, they ask for a lot, and that may be part of the reason why they don't get a lot of requests to do stuff like that.
Going along those lines of that kind of requirement or whatever in terms of planning and developments and so forth is even brought up in our community response that some communities are interested in having an environmental assessment done as part of
something else?
I thought the discussion came after the approval. The approval or the turning down. One of the points I want to make is that I feel like we're not technical experts. We can look and find some of this material and say other people have done, but I think our main job should be to try to impress on the board of commissioners the urgency, the seriousness of these things. The fact that we really believe they need to get promote some activity toward this. Not to say, well, we got all the answers and here's what your staff want to do, and here's how it should be written up. That can be done later, but the first thing we need to do is get their attention, say, hey, this is important, get them to agree to a certain degree that it is important enough to pursue further, then we can worry about all these other things. What's most appropriate for Anderson County? The first thing they're going to say is, well, it's fine that these counties are doing this and this, but what we want is something that's most appropriate for us. So at this point, we can't make those decisions. It's just the food that we've done, and go ahead as we've done here. And if somebody comes back to us and they want more information, then we can provide it.
Well, the things we've accomplished so far at this meeting is exactly that. We're concerned about the cost of erosion borne by people off site, and the fact that erosion is a concern because of the change of the land. There has been construction on areas that probably shouldn't happen.
Well, I think that's an important part. Cost. How much does it cost us, the people in Henderson County, when these people do not do what they should have done in the first place?
That's the root of all of this.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that should get their attention, but I'm not sure we presented it that way, did we? Yeah.
Well, I think I made something to say to that effect. Comments that put the points up over the bag.
Well, we did say that. Numbers would be good if we had numbers. It's going to cost $10 million to restore this. We don't know that,
Look what happened in Lake Orby a couple of years ago on the construction of Carriage Park in that vicinity.
Yeah.
The lake got filled up with sediment and the homeowners had to go to court.
It's still a mess, isn't it?
Yeah. But in some discussion, it might have even happened again.
process and in the regional plans that have been developed, community plans. It's not something that just this committee is concerned about. It's has broader concerns than that. We've been fortunate that the area waters have been monitored for a goodly number of years by the VWIN project, Volunteer Water Information Network, and that's been under the supervision of very competent scientists. So that has been very well done, and it has shown that the majority of our creeks have decreased in terms of quality. It has had direct impact on game fish, which have diminished. It's had a negative impact on property values along creeks, so that there has been some very real economic ramifications caused by these problems. In terms of how things have changed over the years, there certainly has been a decline over the past 2 years, 4 years or so. The water quality generally has neither improved nor declined, but it is at a low level. Our streams are polluted. There have been, in some watersheds, more extensive studies, one of which was done in Mud Creek watershed under the supervision of Diane Silver of the Cooperative Extension Service. And there she was able to demonstrate that erosion losses can exceed 20 tons per year. Some of the major causes of our water pollution problem has been erosion and material moving off of land adjacent to creeks that has contained both fertilizers and pesticides. And these chemicals adhere to soil particles, so the erosion acts as a conduit to bring this into our local surface waters. So it's something to be concerned. We also have some unique problems in the Mills River watershed, which is an area that has been extensively farmed for more than 50 years. There's a problem with legacy pesticides, DDT and the likes, that were put down 25 years ago, but these chemicals continue to continue to be toxic. They don't degrade, and they are getting into the water, Mills River water, the creeks, etc., and that these waters are the drinking water for much of Henderson County and a good part of Buncombe County as well, and that these toxins are not destroyed during normal water purification process.
Does anything destroy them?
Yes. High heat, enclosed incineration. But the way to handle this problem, the best way to handle the problem, is keep it out. And the one of the things that has exacerbated this is that berms were built along the creek. But farmers, select a number of farmers, have dug holes in the berm so that the material is moving in, which the eroding soil carrying the pesticide. This is foolish from an economic standpoint from the farmers, because they're losing topsoil as well as the fertilizers that they put on their field if they slowed the movement of water off, that these things could be retained and more effectively used. So they're wasting their money besides adding to the pollution problem. This was
so if these old DDTs are in the soil, so they're poisoning the soil at this point, or are they, still helping in some way to decrease the light or something?
They probably are acting on some insects that aren't resistant to the DDT. That's probably the case. They've been around so long that the insects are resistant, so they aren't functioning, but they're there to remove. To scrape the whole field, et cetera, and remove it would be not cost effective. And sedimentation is a very real problem. And as was also mentioned, the fact that the sedimentation decreases the carrying capacity of the creeks and have resulted in increased flooding and damage, as the fact that the creeks can no longer handle the viable water, and the fact that our weather patterns are changing and we're getting more intense precipitation over a shorter period of time, so the incidence of this flooding is going to increase as well. So what we need to do is do a more effective job of keeping the erosive material out of the water, and I have some recommendations which are here in red in the document in front of you. The commissioners should direct the cooperative extension agency to try to convince those carrying such pollution practices to cease. Money should be sought from granting agencies to repair berms and erect others where appropriate. In the case of farmers who decline to cooperate in abating the city's pollution, the commissioner should support Diener action to stop such practices. That's digging holes, dikes,
I think isn't Diener like very small now? Around our area, anyway.
They're small. Well, the number of people in the office have been reduced slightly, but DNR will respond where directed, and they are doing some monitoring in those where we'll try to characterize them a little bit better. One other problem is lawn chemicals, as well as sediment, which directly into the stream. This could be reduced if we maintain buffer zones along the creek. Buffer zones no wider than 10 feet can be effective in many areas, and this can substantially reduce the inflow of eroded soil as well as fertilizers coming off of lawns. So another recommendation, the commissioner should consider giving tax reductions to property owners based on the area of land that they convert or have converted to buffers. The loss of revenues resulting from taking a small amount of undeveloped land off the tax roll would be minimal. The water quality benefits from maintenance and existing, from maintaining existing and creating new buffer zones would be substantial. The commissioners also should support an education campaign to encourage land managers to use only the quantities of pesticides and fertilizers recommended for the type of use to which they are dedicating their property. The Soil Conservation Service should be assistance in determining the appropriate quantities. And also, as I mentioned, the precipitation issue is going to be more of a problem as we get these higher amounts of rainfall in a short period of time. So we urge the commissioners to take an active role in abating this problem, and the recommendations stated above are, we believe, are cost-effective initial steps. So, sir?
Yeah, an interesting thing here. You're saying that the construction of a buffer zone of 10 feet, you know, would do a lot. But I'm sure the berms that they're constructing are taking away land as well. It seemed to me, if I was a farmer, I'd say, hey, look, if I can do just as well with a 10-foot buffer, which will do some good, as opposed to a 10-foot berm, which I'm going to put a hole through, you know,
well,
what's the logic there?
Well, Rich, it depends on the nature of the land. If you have a slope such that you get a fair amount of water coming off a field, which doesn't have vegetation on it to hold anything back, you need a berm to hold that. If it's a case of a lawn that has grass growing on it, etc., then the buffer zone of undisturbed vegetation is enough to take care of this.
Presumably a wider buffer would do the same thing, but farmers probably would want a 50-foot buffer.
Maybe. It depends upon the slope of the land.
seems to me that what you're dealing with here is just getting these people to follow best management practices. No more than that.
Makes sense. For a little bit of analogy, I support the right of a person to own a gun, a rifle. However, I certainly would object to that person discharging that gun in the manner that the projectile flew across his neighbor's property. And that's basically what we're doing. Instead of it being an individual bullet, it's millions of particles of soil and pesticides and fertilizers attached to that soil that they're allowing to go into the stream. It's a practice that should be abated. And you're absolutely right. It's best management practice. It makes sense. People are wasting the money by allowing this stuff to get off of their property instead of staying on.
And, you know, the state ordinances, which unfortunately are not applicable to agriculture, is the one I referred to earlier, basically say, hey, look, all it asks is you keep your property on your property. You know, don't be saying I take anything away from them. It's just, sure.
Well, if you take the 10 feet all along the field, you are taking land away from them.
You are removing land that could possibly be tilled. But they also are losing more things that are more valuable than just that 10 feet tilled by allowing the fertilizers and the chemicals to leave instead of staying on the field where they could do some good.
Now, are we dealing with pretty large farmers or small farmers who maybe only have a 200 foot deep?
It's a mixed bag. There are one of the farmer who was, there's fairly decent evidence that he was responsible for the fish kill that occurred on this river. That's a pretty small operation, maybe 5 acres.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the other acres, some of the other farms in that watershed are 100 acres.
How about the super solid people?
Same thing. If they apply the recommended amount of fertilizer, which most of them do, then that stuff stays on the
incorporated. They cleared all the natural buffer and this about 12 months ago, which was a part of the natural buffer that they did have. But then it was, I don't know if that's a separate.
The one side farm that I'm aware of, on 191, they do have a buffer, a berm to keep them out.
Now, can the berm be vegetated?
Sure.
Okay. If you make it
the berm,
no,
it should be
vegetated. The other thing is that one of the reasons why they have built also a berm there is to keep the water from overflowing the road from the creek onto the field, which is a cute problem.
What's the difference between a berm and a buffer?
A berm is a raised area.
Yeah.
You could consider a type of buffer. Most buffers are simply areas, natural areas that are not disturbed.
There were trees growing along the stream bed. Would be those.
Okay, so you can just consider that the buffer. Okay.
And the briars and
that's
the grass
the
buffer, whatever. And they act as little dams.
Mm-hmm.
Do they have a lot of ability to purify the water that eventually does go through them?
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
And slow down if nothing else.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Slow it down, spread it out. Soak it in.
Okay, this report contains several recommendations.
So is this report as a result of your work with Mills River and that other group that you're in?
In part. It's also conversations with people like Diane Silver, people with the U.S. Geological Survey, people at the water treatment plants,
So are any of the others, as far as you know, taking any action? Other people in the group? Did you, Nose River, are they?
Well, I'll tell you what happened.
Of course, that's part of Henderson County, so, although.
Well, the Mills River is, the watershed is part of Henderson County. But what has happened is that the membership on the committee has been, taken over by the agricultural interests who don't want to do anything. And it's very frustrating for the fellow who chairs the committee, but they're not doing it. So if anything's gonna get done, it's gonna be done by the county.
Or the EPA eventually.
Yeah, or, actually, one of the efforts to do event monitoring on that stream, that is sampled right after rainfall. There was an attempt on the part of the mayor of Mills River to disrupt that.
Oh, with all of you?
Yeah.
That was a deer operation.
And, of course, that's a violation of all sorts of regulations. The mayor did take it up the line, and he was told it was completely off base. And he represents the agricultural.
And he's just be elected.
So, the board, the Mills River Board also is supporting the. Though they made a primary for agricultural businesses.
Which they're entitled to their representation, I'm not saying they're not, but the point is, they need to be educated. About knowing, and be a little more community, you know, spirited, community-minded, yeah.
And my concern is they're stifling information.
Yeah, I would think that if the public really realized what they were doing, there would be an outcry against them, but.
This is an effort to bring those things, yeah.
Right.
Has there been any, has there been anything in the Times News editorials about the offense to cycle the deer activity?
Okay, there are several, what amounts to recommendations in this document, items in red. I'm going to, in the interest of time here, to group those as a motion. Do it now, here, a second. Any further discussion? By the opposed to forward this whole document and push.
Will you just send us, can you copy us on the recommendations? One thing that, because when recommendations have gone to the commissioners, I don't think we've ever really received whatever the recommendations were that have gone to the commissioners. We just.
Sure.
Yeah, that happened the last time when Ron sent something to her, named copy us, he copied and had to start on it, but.
No, I think that's a very legitimate request, I see this.
Could you make sure I'm included as well for the public record documents?
What's that?
Could you make sure I'm included as well, so I can keep a copy just in case?
Sure.
Thank you.
Now, when you tell you, it's not coming down this committee, it's not about to leave the country, but it will be that.
The commissioners canceled their mid-month meeting anyway, so it would be January probably before they would look at it anyway, so.
Before the commissioners gather again. Okay, the motion has not been, it's been seconded, but not been voted on. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any other business to be brought before this?
Since Dan is not here, may I speak for the county on updates on energy management?
Absolutely, sure.
I'm not sure if you guys have seen, as of, I believe, yesterday, the solar thermal project was completed, and it's on top of the 95 courthouse. So when you leave, drive past it to today. I just saw them for the first time this afternoon. You can see our solar panels on the side. There's 32 of them, I believe, that will be heating the hot water for the detention center, which that's our main user of hot water in the county. You know, office buildings, very little use, just with hand washing and things like that. So we expect about a 45% decrease in our use of natural gas. What we did, we did a power purchase agreement, which we've talked about a little bit before here. We'll be buying the solar thermal water from Solherm Energy, who owns and maintains the system at a much lower rate than we paid for natural gas, and of course it's renewable. So we're really, really excited about that. And I just saw them for the first
time today.
Yes. And yeah, one of the many things that's exciting about today. So I just saw them this afternoon, and I'm so excited about that, that that's complete and ready to go. We have finally completed the rest of our lighting retrofit project that we've talked about many times. We had extra money left over, so we went back and bought 287 occupancy sensors that we've also installed, as well as a few more lights and things. So we finally finished that last week, closing out all those grants. Since December 31st is our deadline, it's a good thing we got it done in time. So we're working on that. Also, I don't know if anyone has read the newspaper recently, but the new convenience center out at the transfer station opened today. So we have a much nicer, cleaner, safer facility for citizens to recycle as well. I know it's not something you guys focus on as well, but it's a good thing to spread the word and let everyone know that we have a nice
new. So where is it now? I did see it.
It's right next to where it was before, the convenience center. It's if you're coming from Hendersonville out towards Stony Mountain, it's just before you got to the old entrance. It's a nice paved road up. It's,
I did read it to my husband.
Yeah, I'm so excited about that. It's just going to make things much easier for people that recycle on their own, and hopefully encourage people that weren't recycling before, you know, because they were like, well, I don't want to get my car dirty or, you know, things like that. Hopefully it'll really encourage those people to start recycling more. So hopefully we'll increase our recycling efforts in that way.
I have a question.
Mm-hmm.
Why did they reduce the intake of certain labeled plastics?
It's the same as it has been before. We're not changing anything. We're actually hoping to expand that in the future.
So, but in the past, everything plastic went in the glass and plastic thing, and now aren't they putting some of the numbers 4, 5, and 4s and whatever in?
We never
garbage?
Took those. We only take class 6 that have basically 1s and 2s.
Yeah.
Is pretty much if it's got a bottle, a neck on it.
Yeah.
So laundry detergent, soda bottles, right. Peanut butter. That's all we've ever taken. So we're still taking the same things. We're hoping to expand to 5s and possibly get styrofoam at some point.
Right.
Styrofoam, the big problem is storage space.
Right, right.
But we're looking in. I'm constantly doing research on different companies that can take that for us. It's just we're kind of weighing, is it cost beneficial for us? Is it going to cost us way too much money? Obviously can't do it. So we're always looking for new ways to recycle things like that. Number 5s and styrofoam are my two focuses right now that I'm trying to push on next.
It should be a good market for the polypropylene. I mean, it's
finding a vendor that can take it. Right now, we've started in July 1 with American Recycling as our new recycling vendor. They are in the process of opening a MRF in Candler, is where they selected their site. We're hoping that as they get more volume at that site, they will be able to take things like that. It's just, you know, recycling markets are up and down, and so it's if it's beneficial for the vendor to take it from us, then we can accept it. So we're working on getting that, expanding in those efforts as well.
Do
so.
You know where the co-op sends their polypropylene?
No, I know that they take it, but
take
I don't
it.
Know where
and
they
send
it.
I got a bag to take to them because a lot of frozen entrees are now being packaged.
Mm-hmm.
And it surprises me because polypropylene has a low impact strength at low temperature.
And it's,
I mean,
it's
if you drop the frozen tray, it's going to crack. So I don't know why they've chosen to use that. But anyway, it's all colorless, non-pigmented, you know, could be used for anything. It's not that well, it's the wrong color, and we can't use it for this application.
There's more and more.
There's more than just yogurt cups.
Right, yeah, there's more and more of that being able to be recycled. I mean, just sometimes, and I know they don't do it all the time, if people leave the caps on the soda bottles, you know, you used to have to take the caps off. Well, now if you leave the cap on, they'll just cut the cap off and grind it up, and since it separates, it raises higher in the water, they scoop it off the top, and Home Depot uses that for their paint cans now. It's just kind of depends.
So you can leave the lids on now.
You can, I mean.
But still, you should take them off.
Should if you forget, it's not the end of the world if you forget that. They don't throw the whole bottle away anymore, they just cut the top off. So just with machinery, things advancing.
I went down to the Spartanburg recycling facility that takes our...
the American.
Actually, they get it from somebody else, but the guy down there said, don't throw your caps away.
Mm-hmm.
They take them off, and then they can use them.
The Spartanburg facility.
So the best thing to do is squeeze all the air out of the bottle,
mm-hmm.
then put the cap back on. So you reduce the volume a little bit. Part of the problem they have when people don't squeeze the air out is when they put them in their compactor, they tend to explode.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and cause problems. But
I don't squeeze the air out.
Yeah, they're so down gauged now. You know, plastic pop bottle is just paper thin almost.
And it makes it easier for you to transport. It's less in the bag. That's what's going on in the energy recycling realm of the county. We're really excited. I'm super excited about the solar panels. When I saw them just a little while ago, that's my baby.
Cloudy days.
Crazy to see us making progress in some area.
Natural gas.
The natural gas is the backup.
Kicks on when
and it depends. There's the possibility that natural gas, if there's a higher than normal volume of water that day, you know, if they're washing extra clothes or things like that, natural gas is always the backup. We're just going to significantly reduce the amount of natural gas that we're using.
You just have to encourage people to do laundry on that sunny day.
Yeah, hopefully. The jail's got to do it, you know, normal schedules anyway. But one more thing, the compressed natural gas station. We have almost completely secured everything to do 3 more spheres. So we're going to be expanding the compressed natural gas station. Currently we have 3. We're in the process of getting quotes and everything together to do 3 more. So we will double our capacity at the compressed natural gas station. Technically, it's still not open to the public. We are using it with our inspections trucks. We're getting 2 new inspection trucks really soon, so we'll have 4 CNG trucks in the county. We've had issues with our contractor getting the software available so that I can track it and pay our taxes.
Okay.
We don't want to get in trouble with the IRS not paying our taxes on it. So it's running. County facility vehicles are using it every day.
About the Apple Country Transit?
I know that they're in the process of ordering the vehicles, I believe is what Anthony updated the board at the last meeting. So things are moving right along with that, and hopefully we'll get our software, we can do our grand opening and everything soon. It's just been a struggle working with our contractor towards the end, getting the proper software to be able to open to the public.
Now, is the county going to make any kind of a effort to more publicity about the enhanced recycling at the transfer station?
Well, there's been 2 newspaper articles on it.
Pictures, too? I mean, pictures get people's attention.
Pictures in one of the articles. There were 2 articles. My monthly column to the Times News highlighted it last month. This month I'm talking about solar thermal, so maybe, you know, on an off month when I don't have something that's directly pertaining, I might bring it up again. We're not doing a grand opening yet because the area is still under a little bit of construction.
You might do something like giving a flyer
to the haulers, stacks of flyers at the libraries.
Well, how about
schools,
giving them to the haulers?
The haulers had them available
with their
to them.
Empty garbage cans and
we passed some out to the haulers. But we passed them a big sheet that had pictures of what can and can't recycle in the new same hours, but a map, and we passed out. I mean, we made a stack probably that big that we passed out everywhere.
And the people who were using the facility, that
mm-hmm. they were, as you were going in, they were passing them out for 2 or 3 days.
Now, is anybody checking that we're complying with the bag for bag requirements any more than they did in the past?
They spot check.
Huh?
Yeah, I mean, if you're going into the transfer station, we have the right to inspect your bag, but they can't check every single person.
Right.
We take in 4 tons a day. There's no way we can check all that.
I haven't been checked for a year or more.
Yeah, and you know, if it's just
general
house.
I look into the little shed to see if there's somebody there, and I'm offering to open my trunk. But
we still have the staff to check every single person. That's just kind of what it comes down to. It's an honor program.
Yeah.
We tell you what you can and can't bring in.
The newspaper article I read said that there will be staff available to assist people. And if they're there to assist people, they can also say,
well, what's going to happen is, since it is a separate entrance than the transfer and the scales and everything before, if you're going up to do a bag-for-bag program, if the attendant, there will be an attendant up there when it's open. We've hired 3 part-time people, and we're looking for a 4th part-time person to work at the convenience center. It's still open if you know anyone who wants to work part-time up there. And they're there to assist, unload, direct. They can, like, if you bring in 12 bags of trash and one bag of recycling, they're going to turn you away and send you down to the scale so you pay.
Okay.
If you have a bag and a half of trash and one full bag of recycling, you know, that's when you're making an effort and they're going to let you go ahead and go on through. It's pretty much one for one. If it's slightly more trash than there is recycling,
you might have cardboard and something else that you can put your...
But if you're up at the convenience center, if it's not something that can be disposed of at the convenience center, you will be turned away and taken down so you pay across the scales. No money's taken up at the convenience center. So if you go up there with a load full of furniture and you're just trying to get away with paying it, you're going to be sent away, and you have to cross the scales and pay.
So they put an awful lot of that kind of stuff in the dumpsters at the current facility.
And before which there was not the ability, the location made it so that it was very difficult to monitor. If somebody, you know, snuck around the corner and threw away three more bags, if the attendant was helping somebody unload a TV on the other side, they couldn't see it.
Well, it's not so much the bags. I mean, if you look into the dumpster and you see the picnic table down there, that's the problem. It's not the extra bag or two.
I mean, the layout of the facility itself, the new convenience center, just will eliminate a lot of that. And once the entire project is complete, we're going to be having a grand ribbon opening and everything, so hopefully we'll get a lot more publicity in the spring as well. But the new... layout. Have you guys seen the plans in this meeting? I know that they were brought forth at one point.
No, Marcus showed them at a forum a while back. It wasn't. There was a forum where they had people from the city.
On November 8th.
Okay.
And I know we had them in the newspaper at one point in time. The current entrance to the scales is going to be completely closed. Nobody will have access there. The new convenience center will be one entrance. There will be new scales built. And that'll be another entrance. Just from the scale house, the scales operator is going to be able to see into the transfer bay, too, and see if somebody's trying to do something they're not supposed to do. Before, it's around the corner. There's no way they can see. Just so with the layout and the new design of the facility, it's going to eliminate a lot of the problems with people not doing what they're supposed to do just because it's easier for one person to be able to see in more than one spot. So I think it's really going to help with a lot of things. But like we were saying, we can't check every single car this way. If you go across the scales, you get asked, what do you have? If you just say, oh, I have a couple bags of household trash, if it looks like you've just got a couple bags in the trunk of your car, then you go on through it. If you've got a huge trailer, you know, with stuff all underneath it, they might ask you to lift up the tarp. You know, and that's always a right. They can always inspect.
Will we be going to a single stream collection at some point?
For recycling?
For the convenience center.
If you
For the recycling center?
Not at the convenience center. If you have a hauler, you already get single stream. If you're taking it yourself and doing the bag for bag, you have to sort it yourself. That's the, you get to take your trash for free, but you have to sort your recycling. That's the kind of thing. Haulers do single stream.
Well, it's worth more when it's sorted, obviously.
Mm-hmm. And haulers do single stream. So if you have a private hauler, you do blue bags, and that's where our single stream comes from. So. Any other questions or want to know something, heard something, want to know what's going on?
I'm just glad to see we're making progress.
Any other business anybody want to bring before this August body?
Well, I know that we're not doing the plans anymore, but I did call this morning and check on what was going on, and Dana's plan has been completed. Let me my right.
Mary Jane, we did not say we weren't going to do these things. We just said the major efforts that we're going to focus on are these. Anything that comes up that you want to bring up like you are now, that's fine.
I think Dana is, they're talking about redesigning the park, and it's an ongoing thing, and they need to face that. That was one of the things they wanted, and I think the commissioners, it sounds like, oh, they're looking into it. As far as anything else, I guess they were talking about East Flat Rock, and the plan for that, and Green River area, and Crab Creek, Canoga Low. Those three areas are on hold, from what I understand. But of course, I know it's what I wish we would, you know, I was under the impression that once they did the local plan like Etowah, then they would start to I guess they had sent stuff out to do the analyzer, you know, like the roads, they sent it to the road people and divided it to the proper people.
any staff member who wants to?
Small area plans, that's the planning department, so I'm not exactly sure who's in charge there. I contacted Anthony Stark with specific questions on small area.
Whoever I talked to, I asked that question, and they said, well, we're all working on it, so I was like, okay. I don't even, he didn't give me to you, I don't know, it didn't sound like Matt. I think Matt used to be in charge of it, but.
Can you introduce it when you said you realized that the county is on hold?
Right, that's according to the gentleman I talked to this morning, there's been no more apparent interest in carrying forward on the other three plans. And I don't exactly know exactly what's going on with the three that have been completed. Well, it could be.
They had significant budget restrictions. They lost some positions. They lost a couple.
And you're saying that's the situation. What the cause is, I don't know, but that would be a logical conclusion. Anyway, I just thought I would bring you up to that day, what little I know.
Anyone think?
So then I assume we're gonna meet in 3 months unless we hear otherwise.
We have Marcus and I's recommendation at this point. Within the next 3 months, we expect a decision from the board. So we were thinking it would be a good idea to hold off officially scheduling a meeting until we get further action. That way there's no confusion. Yes, we have a meeting. No, we don't. As of right now, just not plan one for the 3 months from now. Because in 3 months, we actually expect in January a formal decision to be made on how to combine everything. So that way there's no confusion, yes or no.
I think in any case, we're still going to want to get some sort of response to these recommendations.
And certainly if I hear any response, I will pass those along. And I will pass along the recommendations.
Megan, do you know if commissioners are attending to their liaison responsibilities?
I only go to this board meeting and the Solid Waste Advisory Board meeting. I have not seen a commissioner at any of those, obviously, not this one.
I talked to Bill O'Connor at that landslide forum a while back, and he said, sure, I'll come, just send me an email, and I'll put it on my calendar.
He is on our Sunshine list, so he gets the same emails that you
get. Well, I sent him a reminder, and Bob also did, and, we get no response. Now, if he can't make it, it'd be nice if he'd say, hey, look, I'm busy that day, we can't fit you in.
I see him probably about as much as you do, and I work in the same building as his office. I mean, the commissioners don't come in every day. They have, sometimes they come in the evenings and do work
hours. It would be nice
to
have a guy here so that we can get some feeling for what he thinks might successfully go through the commissioners. We're flying blind.
My suggestion would be due to what you, if you hadn't told me you've already emailed him, that's what I would say to his email.
Wouldn't Terry be more of a direct contact with him?
She can forward an email, and she can direct you to his phone, she works for them, not she. I control them, obviously. So it's email, leave him a voicemail.
Well, at this point, we just wait.
You see, being optimistic, we're going to have another important support. Do you see us maintaining that we have three subcommittees now? Are we keeping those three subcommittees and just addressing other issues?
And adding subcommittees where appropriate?
I think the subcommittee format is working wonderfully. I mean, we've done more in the last 6 months than you have 2 years since I've been doing